I'm John Krall. Today on No Limits, we're going to explore the plans to update and repair the North Split in Indianapolis. We're going to look at where things are and consider what options might be. My guests are Andy Dietrich of Indiana Department of Transportation and engineer Seth Schickel of HNTB, Marsh Davis of Indiana Landmarks, and Indianapolis architect Kevin Osborne. Please join the conversation. Call 866-476-3881, email nolimits at WFYI.org, Facebook is No Limits WFYI, Twitter is WFYI. Now, this news. Welcome to No Limits. I am John Krall, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, publisher of the StatehouseFile.com, and your host. We're going to be talking today about some proposed work on the North Split here in Indianapolis. If you want to join the conversation, you can give us a call at 866-476-3881. You can send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org. You can find us on Facebook at nolimitswfyi, or you can track us down on Twitter at WFYI. My guests for this first segment are Andy Dietrich of the Indiana Department of Transportation and engineer Seth Schickel of HNTB. Welcome to both of you.
Thank you, John. Pleasure to be here.
It's good to have you both here. So I want to talk a little bit, start first, because I anticipate we're going to get a question on this, and I think we'll just take care of it at the beginning. We got something similar when we were dealing with forestry issues. We had to separate and talk with you guys in a separate segment. What was the reasoning for that? I understand that there is, that you have to operate within some ethical constraints.
It's part of our process, the environmental process. We have to go back to the fact that this is a federal aid project. We will be using federal dollars to construct whatever the project ends up looking like. Because we're using federal dollars, we have to follow the National Environmental Policy Act procedures if we're using federal money or going across federal lands. It's a pretty stringent process to identify the impacts that this project will have, not just on the natural environment, but on the human environment, the business environment, and a whole range of potential impacts. And that's the process we're in right now. The information gathering for what is the baseline of reconstructing the North Split interchange, rehabbing 32 bridges that are contained within the project area, and that's the primary focus is the safety of those bridges and getting those taken care of. So we have to take a look at a number of alternatives, everything from doing absolutely nothing, and what is that going to look like 20 or 30 years from now, to some of the proposals that have been brought to us from community partners, which are a little bit broader than we probably were looking at as just a regular rehabilitation job, but they are now part of the mix. So we have anywhere from, 10 to 12 alternatives that we will be screening to determine what's the most reasonable, what's the most feasible in terms of constructability, and what's the most prudent in terms of use of taxpayer dollars.
Seth.
Yeah, I'd like to be clear, too, that when we started the project, we were focusing primarily where that need is within the North Split interchange, and we've got those bridges that Andy mentioned. And since we've gotten so much positive public input and some ideas for really interesting newer alternatives, we've kind of taken a step up to start looking at the interstate system within the downtown area as a whole, not just the North Split, but how the interstate functions across I-65 and I-70 in the downtown area. So our new analysis is kind of going to be of alternatives that are more on that system level than just within the North Split.
We probably ought to define here before we go too much further for people who, unlike me, who haven't lived in Indiana for most of their lives, what the North Split is, what area we are talking about, Andy.
The project area is just west of the Keystone Rural Exit. The western boundary would be, say, Central Avenue, and then where the two come together and meet and head south down to Washington Street. So that's the interchange of two of the busiest highways, not only in the state, but in the nation. The North Split interchange truly is the crossroads of America.
you were making a hand symbol real quickly there, Seth. Those don't translate well on radio.
That was number two I put up.
Okay.
The North Split is actually the second most heavily traveled interchange in the state of Indiana. There's one way up north, but North Split's number two.
Okay. So what is the reasoning for looking at doing the work right now? Make the case. Why is it something that we're considering rehabilitating right now?
Well, the infrastructure itself was built 50 years ago. I mean, the bridges we mentioned, 32, those 32 bridges are coming up on the end of their useful life. In fact, a couple of them, we have to do a little bit of work on them throughout this summer just to get them through to the point where we can do the reconstruction. That's just just because they're old. The infrastructure is old, and the technology that was used in bridges is not as durable, 50 years ago as maybe it is today. So that's just a timing thing. The other part, and I'll let Seth talk a little bit more about the engineering, the North Split was designed for an additional leg. If people remember, it was I-169, I think, that would have gone out and connected to 69. So some of the movements we have there, the way it's actually constructed is not the most efficient nor the most safe configuration. And we'll take a look at reconstructing that so it is safer and it operates more efficiently.
That's right. So Andy mentioned the bridge condition, and there's 32 bridges that need repair. Also, the pavement condition out there continues to deteriorate. And because of the amount of traffic that we have within the interchange and within the interstate system as a whole in downtown, there's constant maintenance that's happening, both on the lanes that you drive on and on the shoulders. I'm sure that you've seen vehicles out there doing maintenance repair. What Andy mentioned, those kind of complexities that are out there because the interchange was designed with that fourth leg that never got built. This was back in the 60s when it was planned and designed, and it never got built. So there are some what we call weaves that are happening out there that we kind of have to jump over a few lanes at a time to make sure you're getting on to the interstate that you want to be on. And part of our plan is to eliminate that somewhat unsafe configuration with the new design.
And what would that new design possibly entail, Seth?
Well, it'll entail a few more direct ramps. So right now there's a lot of ramps out there, so you might be surprised to hear me say more. But the direction that we can put traffic in, we can really, using that same footprint that's out there today, it's got enough space, the state owns enough right-of-way already, to reconfigure a lot of those ramps to make them more efficient. We actually predict to have reduced travel time once the interchange is reconstructed. I do want to be clear that we're talking about some details within the North Split interchange now. Mm-hmm. And again, our current analysis is higher level, looking at the entire system of the interstates.
Okay. What's the timetable on this, Andy? Because it sounds like we're still talking somewhat at conceptual stage, right?
We are. We are very early in what we call the NEPA process, National Environmental Policy Act. And you'll hear NEPA talked about a lot. It's going to be about a two-year investigation for the environmental side. We're about 4 months into that right now. And you kind of mentioned not engaging and not talking about the pros and cons. To maintain the integrity of the NEPA process, we really have to remain neutral. We cannot advocate for one alternative over another alternative. We have to look at all of them equally. And then we'll come out with an alternative screening report where we do compare everything we're looking at, put it through that matrix of different criteria, how it traffic impacts, does it impact real estate, does it impact historic areas, is it constructible, what's the cost. A lot of those criteria applied to all the alternatives should give us a pretty good direction as to which way we're going to go. Then we'll start focusing on and fine-tuning that preferred alternative. And that'll be, like I said, about a two-year process. During that time, we'll be doing some work on the contracting side, actually putting out the request for proposals, looking for teams. This will be procured as a design build best value. A lot of words there, but it's a non-traditional procurement. It's not your basic NDOT. We do 100% of the plans. We put that contract out for bid. Contractors come in and build it at the lowest cost. That's the way we do most of our things. On large, complex projects like this, we want to tap into the expertise and the experience of our engineering and construction community and let them, you know, show us what they can do to make this a better project, to bring value to the taxpayers.
So when does the process for gathering public input start, and what are the opportunities for offering it?
We have already begun gathering. Obviously, we have taken into account a couple of proposals that have been brought by the public, which is not unusual. On larger projects, I-69 Section 6, for example, from Martinsville to Indianapolis, we had 27 alternatives that we were looking at the very beginning. Most of them were brought to us by the general public, and we had to work down to 14, then to 5, and then finally the preferred. So right now we're doing work with our consulting agencies, what we call Section 106. Those are the representatives from the historic neighborhoods and historic organizations to help us identify, you know, what the impacts to historic areas might be. We have our resource agencies that we have been meeting with, IDEM, DNR, EPA, both state and federal agencies that would have something to say about what we're going to be doing, you know, within the footprint. Our original intent was to bring our screening alternative to the public right around this time, I think, maybe, you know, about this time frame, and let the public take a look. But since, as Seth said, we have gone up and are taking a broader look at things, we've had to modify our schedule a little bit. So I think the first public outreach, public meetings for information and taking comment should be later this spring, probably late March, early April.
Right. And you have an option, right, for people if they have questions or concerns, not just about this, but about anything connected with NDOT, to reach out and connect with you.
We
right?
do indeed. In fact, funny you should mention that, because today NDOT actually did introduce a brand new single point of contact for customer inquiries, and this is statewide, not just this project, but it's NDOT for you, 855-463-6848. That's 855-NDOT4U. That number goes into a central customer service area. If you have a question about this project specifically, let those folks know. They'll get that information to us, and we'll follow up.
Now, this is not going to be an inexpensive process. I mean, we're talking about some major work. At the high end, what could we be looking at? And at the least expensive alternative, what might we be looking at? You're both looking at each other here.
Yeah.
All right, I'll start with Seth.
Yeah, sure, John. I appreciate the question. I would say that the answer right now is we don't know. We're working on those numbers now. So the project was originally budgeted, as I mentioned, as a interchange reconstruction. And the cost for that is probably somewhere between $250 and $300 million. Not chump change, right?
Mm-hmm.
As we look larger, as we look at the entire downtown interstate system, obviously that cost would rise. So how we compare those costs of, say, a boulevard with tunnels underneath or a complete reconstruction of all of those interstates, those alternatives that we're looking at right now, cost will be one of the screening factors. And we don't have the answers on it right now, but sure, you can consider it be higher than that.
Okay, so it sounds like the price tag starts at $250 million and likely would go up. Andy?
I was just going to say the original project.
But these are federal dollars, right? They're not
about 90% federal dollars,
okay.
Correct. The original project was to go in, fix the 32 bridges over the next decade, and you know, that was about it. It makes sense to go in and take care of this project, a little more complex, to do the interchange modifications and fix the bridges. So the $250 million is what we have budgeted in the next level plan. That may be higher, may be lower, depending on what our contractor and engineering teams bring to us during procurement.
And what's the timeline, Andy? I mean, when we start work, I mean, most people here in Indiana know road construction means disruptions and all of that. And there's very little that happens in this city without, you know, some interaction with that part of the highway system. What's it going to be like?
We're not sure of what that's going to look like yet. The maintenance of traffic and how that has worked will be part of the innovation we're looking for from our constructor teams. You know, if somebody says, if we find that the public appetite for a full closure is higher and people can live without it for 12 to 18 months, that may be one of those things that we put into the procurement documents that say, hey, we really want this to happen quickly, and teams that can say we can do it in a shorter duration will score better. If the appetite is we want some traffic going through, but we'll take 4 or 5 years for construction or 2 or 3 years, that'll come into play too. But it's really early in the process to say exactly what that's going to look like, except it won't be happening until 2020 at the earliest.
We are talking about the North Split in Indianapolis and the plans to rehabilitate it. My guests for this segment have been Andy Dietrich of NDOT and Seth Schickel of HNTV. Next segment, I'm going to be talking with Marsh Davis of Indiana Landmarks and Indianapolis architect Kevin Osborne. I'm John Kroll. You're listening to No Limits. Please stay with us. Welcome back to No Limits. I am John Kroll, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, publisher of the StatehouseFile.com, and your host. We're talking today about proposed plans to rehabilitate or reconstruct the North Split in Indianapolis. If you would like to join the conversation, please give us a buzz at 866-476-3881. You can send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org. Find us on Facebook at No Limits WFYI, or track us down on Twitter at WFYI. My guests, as you know, in the first segment were Andy Dietrich of the Indiana Department of Transportation and engineer Seth Schickel of HNTB. For the rest of the program, we're going to be talking with an old friend of the program, Marsh Davis of Indiana Landmarks. I think, Marsh, this is your fourth or fifth appearance on the show, and Indianapolis architect Kevin Osborne. Welcome to both of you. It's good to have you here.
Thank you.
Thanks. Glad to be here. Hope this doesn't mean I can't come back after this.
Oh, no. The door is always open.
Thank you.
The door is always open. So what Andy and Seth said in that first segment pretty much was, we're still very early in the process. There really isn't a plan yet. Things are still at the conceptual stage, and this is the time to be raising concerns or all of that. Marsh, I'm going to give you the first word. What are some of the concerns that you might have, or at least priorities that you would like to see addressed in any work that is done?
Well, let me start by suggesting this is probably the most significant urban design issue that Indianapolis has faced, probably since the highways themselves were constructed back in the 60s and 70s. This is a big, big project. If the preliminary designs, as have been not officially released, but what has been out there for some time, if it's anything close to that, it's going to have a huge impact on our downtown, on our neighborhoods, on the whole quality of life. So, yes, there are any number of measures. From my narrow standpoint in historic preservation, we can look at the impact on historic neighborhoods. But it's so much bigger than that. It really has to do with the livability of our community. And at some point in this discussion, if I could riff a little bit on the history of the highways and how it links up with the origins of historic preservation, I'd like to get into that.
Well, now is the moment. You set yourself up here. So why don't we do that?
If Kevin will allow, just a few minutes.
Yeah.
Well, think about when the interstates were being planned, built. This was post-World War II era. Mm-hmm. American cities urban areas were in decline. They were increasingly devalued as places to live, even to work. And I think a lot of the planning for this infrastructure happened in that context. So at that time, there was also a rising concern that these projects, these federally funded projects, namely the interstate highway system and urban renewal, were just wreaking havoc on historic resources across America. And that's what gave birth to the National Historic Preservation Act of 1966, which carries with it a lot of the regulatory or protective measures that we'll be looking at as this project unfolds. But so the highways themselves, in an odd way, were a major impetus for the modern historic preservation movement, at least in the public sector part of things.
Well, and this was identified as a concern even back then. My understanding is that of the history of this is that originally, and it's a product of the Eisenhower administration primarily, is that President Eisenhower wanted the interchanges for the interstates to be built well outside urban areas. It had to be something you had to drive to access, but he couldn't get the votes in Congress to do that because they wanted the building projects in the cities. Obviously, it's had some long-range consequences here. We did a show on Tuesday when we were talking about how a lot of this construction blasted historic neighborhoods, yeah. Particularly African-American and other neighborhoods, and the consequences of that are still felt today. So, Kevin, what are your concerns with this as it goes forward?
Yeah, well, I come at this from a few different angles. One, I am a downtown resident. I live in one of those historic neighborhoods, the Old North Side, that had the interstate built through it. I'm also a downtown business owner. I'm a landscape architect and urban designer, and we own our own building, which is in another near downtown neighborhood, the Cole Noble Association or Cole Noble neighborhood. My concerns are from an urban design point of view. What we understand the current direction of the project to be is to significantly expand the current interstate in terms of width. Mm-hmm. As you begin to look at the impacts of that, which is what we have done as part of a coalition of concerned downtown businesses, downtown community organizations, is to understand what those impacts are, and they're very dramatic and impactful in ways that most forward-thinking modern cities would consider in ways that they would consider not something that they want to pursue anymore. So, for example, mm-hmm. Right now, that interstate is, as it comes across the north side of downtown, is about 135 feet wide in terms of the traffic lanes. But the land that NDOT owns, their right-of-way, is approximately about 250 feet wide. So the plans that we have seen show that interstate widening to that full 250 feet. So by over 100 feet, and then vertical retaining walls, which would probably be 25 to 30 feet high on either side of the interstate. So it's kind of a doubling down of a 50-year-old, 1960-year-old mentality of how we should move traffic through a downtown area that really does not consider economic development, community connectivity, connection to transit. These are the types of things that most major American cities are concerned about today that are being, in our opinion, overlooked with NDOT's current proposal.
What are, when we talk about widening this an extra 100 feet, could we talk about what some of the consequences that might be? I mean, we just heard Andy and Seth say, the state already has the right-of-way in these areas. What would happen? I think visually, obviously, we can all understand the impact of having 25 or 30 feet foot high retaining walls that it's probably going to be a little bit hard to see the skyline from some places while you're driving through. But Marsh, what would be the impact of pushing it out?
Well, the neighborhoods will be affected by it. You have residences that will be right up against a wall. I think that Indiana Landmarks, the organization I represent, will probably be as affected by this as anyone because
you guys are right next to the freeway.
Yeah. So, will we be able to do business? I don't know if we can continue to have concerts, weddings, with a highway that's 50 feet closer than it is now. It's pretty darn close. And we feel the vibrations. But if it's 50 feet closer and we're looking out at a concrete wall, it's going to have a devastating impact on our organization. But I don't want it to be just – I'm not just focusing on us. I think of all the neighborhoods around there where, that are relatively – and other businesses too. And we're seeing a lot of interest from the business community. This is not you know, a bunch of design preservationists coming together. This is really attracting the attention of the business community because, as Kevin said, this we want Indianapolis to be a progressive, forward-looking city. The continued widening of highways through the downtown reflects a mentality really that of an earlier generation. And I go back to my initial point that at the time these highways were built, the urban center of Indianapolis was highly devalued. People weren't – it was not a desirable place to live. That has changed dramatically. People want to live there and have a vibrant, walkable, livable community. This will have a vastly negative impact on that. I think back to another history lesson. Frank Lloyd Wright visited Indianapolis in 1957 at a gathering at the John Herron Art Museum, as it was called at the time. And he declared downtown Indianapolis doomed. He said it was doomed and everyone should move to the suburbs. And that was the thinking at the time that these highways were built. These were expendable neighborhoods that were not given the respect. These now have been – there's been this dramatic reinvestment. The resurgence of population downtown really demands a broader look at solutions other than simply widening the highway.
We are talking about the plans, possible plans to rehab and in some levels reconstruct or do additional construction on the North Split here in Indianapolis. If you want to join the conversation, you can call us at 866-476-3881. You can find us on Facebook at No Limits, WFYI. Track us down on Twitter at WFYI, or you can do what a listener named Clark has done and send us an email at nolimits at WFYI.org. Clark writes, to what extent is the projected additional traffic created by the I-69 development from south of Indianapolis driving or contributing to the proposed expansion of the inner loop? Either one of you got an answer on that?
That's probably a question that's best directed at NDOT and their traffic planners. I'm not sure that we have a good response to that. I would say that as we have started to think about, you know, how do we solve both the traffic challenge, because, you know, we're certainly not saying that there isn't a traffic challenge. We've looked at how other cities are doing this, and one of the ways cities are doing this is they are incentivizing or encouraging traffic to travel around the outer loop or an alternate route. And in that case, here in Indianapolis, we have such an alternate route, and that's called 465. If one were to look at the time of travel to go from one side of the city to the other on either one of these interstates, it's virtually the same amount of time to go around 465 as it is to come through downtown. So we do think there are options to reduce the traffic demand on the interstates downtown, and we have encouraged NDOT to think, again, broader in terms of how to accommodate that traffic.
We've gotten a tweet from a listener named Andre. And again, if you want to join the conversation via Twitter, you can find us at WFYI. Andre writes, redesign of the split is important, but why is concern of impacts only focused on historic neighborhoods? 6570 is still affecting other non-historic communities. To be clear, Andre, I don't think they're saying that this is exclusively focused on historic neighborhoods. It's understandable that would be Marsh's priority since that's sort of his job. But, Kevin, I think you were saying that that there are a lot of other people in non-historic neighborhoods who are expressing concern about this too.
I would agree, and we have those same concerns. And I think one thing that everyone needs to understand is that this project is – as currently proposed by NDOT, is much larger than just the North Split itself. Mm-hmm. I heard, you know, your earlier guests, Andy and Seth, talking about, you know, a roughly $250 million project to rehab the North Split. But, you know, the NDOT's project actually extends all the way across the north side of downtown up to 21st Street on 65, and then all the way east on I-70 to 465. This is the larger project that's being planned. The North Split is the first phase of that larger project. The total cost of that, again, was estimated a few years ago at around $700 million. In today's prices, and by the time, you know, this construction actually happens, it could be close to $1 billion. So I think one of the things that we've been trying to emphasize is, this is going to happen. It needs to happen one way or the other. This infrastructure needs to be rebuilt. It is 50 years old. It is not just a reconstruction of the North Split. You know, the entire interstate along the north side of downtown is basically one long bridge. That will come down. It has to be torn down because it's old. As we look at this major project, we need to figure out the best way to do it. And the best way isn't, in our opinion, simply widening the lanes.
We've gotten a question from a listener named John via Facebook, and you can find us on Facebook at No Limits WFYI. John writes, has NDOT considered a tunnel for the downtown highways, especially 65 across the north side of downtown? I think that's actually something you have proposed, Kevin, right?
Well, as I said, we have put a lot of different ideas out there as part of our advocacy group. And again, I want to emphasize that it's not just my firm, Rundell Ernstberger Associates, doing this. It's also Storo Kinsella, another urban design firm here locally, that has been doing a lot of thinking on our own time about this project. And what we've done is we've looked at our peer cities. You know, Indianapolis is not alone in this. Every city in America has 50-year-old interstates that need to be replaced. And they are looking at these creative solutions that do involve depressing and capping perhaps through lanes, as well as multimodal on-grade boulevards, which is a big part of the direction we would like to see this project head.
Gotten a listener named Leah who did not want to go on the air, but offered the suggestion that that no trucks should be allowed on the, she says, on the interstate system. I'm assuming she means just going through Indianapolis. Is that a possibility? Either one of you.
Again, I think the trucks can be incentivized to travel around Indianapolis on 465. There will always be a need to have trucks that come into downtown for deliveries, but that doesn't mean all the trucks need to come downtown. If you ask the trucking industry, they will tell you every minute of delay costs them several thousand dollars. So a solution that would allow them to save time is certainly something they would be very interested in.
So it sounds like, and I want to make sure, neither one of you is saying here the construction doesn't need to happen or some form of this and that these roads don't need to be rehabilitated. It's more about, we'll switch professions here and go over, pretend that we're doctors, and observe the rule, first do no harm, that you start in that way. The least intrusive way is the one you want to go with.
Marsh. Well, yes, none of us is saying that do nothing. That's just not possible. The bridges, several of the bridges have structural deficiencies. They need to be repaired. But we have such a wonderful opportunity, recognizing that something has to be done. We have an opportunity to do something innovative, something progressive that will actually improve Indianapolis. And that's why we are urging, that's what Indiana Landmarks is trying to do with NDOT, is to foster a positive dialogue where these alternatives are really taken seriously, not just looked at and sent away, but really looked at seriously. And could I put a plug in for part of this dialogue that
sure.
we're fostering?
Well, I'll tell you what. Why don't we do that after the break?
Okay,
we're coming up on our break. We're talking about the proposed North Split renovations here on No Limits. My guests for these last two segments are Marsh Davis of Indiana Landmarks and Indianapolis architect Kevin Osborne. If you want to join the conversation, please give us a call at 866-476-3881. Send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org or track us down on social media. I'm John Krall. You're listening to No Limits. Please stay with us. Welcome back to No Limits. I am John Krall, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, publisher of the StateHouseFile.com, and your host. We're continuing our conversation about the possible plans to renovate and repair the North Split in Indianapolis, possibly expand it, it sounds like. Early on in the program, we talked with Andy Dietrich of the Indiana Department of Transportation and engineer Seth Schickel of HNTB. We're talking now with Marsh Davis of Indiana Landmarks and Indianapolis architect Kevin Osborne. If you want to join the conversation, please give us a buzz at 866-476-3881. You can send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org. You can find us on Facebook at nolimitswfyi or track us down on Twitter at wfyi. Okay, Marsh, I had to cut you off when we were going into the break, so I want to give you a chance to finish your thought.
Oh, thank you, John. I was about to mention that again, we, Indiana Landmarks, wants to be part of this positive dialogue with the Department of Transportation and recognizing that something needs to be done. But we would like to have serious consideration given to alternatives. So we are bringing in to Indianapolis on the 26th of February. It's Monday the 26th. A man named John Norquist, former mayor of Milwaukee and later the head of the Congress for the New Urbanism, who has in much of his career has dealt with highway issues, certainly in Milwaukee, but on a national basis now. And in some cases, his work has led to the removal of stretches of interstate highway, allowing for positive redevelopment of roadways, intermodal systems, and economic development through opening up urban land for redevelopment. So the program will be at the Indiana Landmarks Center on Monday, February 26th. Doors open at 5:30. The program starts at 6. It's John Norquist. But I encourage anyone that's interested in this, please attend, but sign up soon because the room is filling up fast.
Is there a cost or
no,
is
it's
open,
no,
free
but,
and open to the public?
You have to register through Eventbrite. So go on the Indiana Landmarks website.
Site and follow it. And you go ahead and give them
the URL.
Go ahead.
IndianaLandmarks.org. Just look us up.
Okay. We've gotten an email question from a listener named Marcia. And again, if you want to join this conversation via email, you can find us at nolimits@wfyi.org. Marcia writes, would you please ask your guests what their vision is for this? So, guys, what is your vision for this, Kevin?
Well, I think we've thought about a lot of different ideas. I would say that whatever we do, we want it to be a solution that will enhance the economic development of the city, position us to be more competitive, to attract new talent and new corporations such as the Amazons of the world. And to me, that certainly doesn't mean a wider elevated highway. What that really means is probably bringing that traffic down to the city grid in a sensitive way that in putting that traffic onto a multimodal boulevard, so a boulevard with a nice wide median, probably three lanes in each direction. Outside those three lanes should be a frontage street that fronts new development with mixed use, residential and commercial retail uses. This boulevard then would be connected into the transit systems that we're currently building and planning. So it instantly creates a paradigm shift mm-hmm. In that we have a new district in the footprint of the old elevated roadway. So it's much farther reaching than simply how do we move traffic, because obviously we have to move traffic, but how do we enhance the neighborhoods? How do we reconnect the neighborhoods into downtown? How do we spur new economic development, new jobs in the city? How do we connect people to transit and to the places where they live?
Well, we've talked about the fact that Indianapolis is not the only city in America that's dealing with this. You know, the interstate highway system is the same age almost everywhere right now. Yes. They're all dealing with these aging concerns. Have there been cities that have dealt with this more successfully than others, and what are the hallmarks of those cities that have? Either one of you, you're...
Well, I'll just start with just yes, you're correct. I mean, you're absolutely right. This is a very opportune moment for America to deal with its aging infrastructure and to rethink how these things are done. Cities, it's happening right now in Denver, in Dallas, Rochester, New York, Syracuse, New York, Detroit. It's not all the Portlands. They're doing it too, and San Francisco, I think, has had a great success in removing swaths of interstate through the downtown area. So if I can just stress the point that the removal of the interstates from urban centers is not a radical idea. In fact, it's not even a new idea. It's happening. And we want, if I go back to the vision question earlier, I guess the vision would be that my vision would be that Indianapolis really looks at these forward-looking ideas as opposed to looking backward to the interstate massive construction that was the mode back in the 1950s.
Kevin.
Yeah, I think all of the cities Marsh mentioned have lessons for us here in Indianapolis. There's some very particular examples. Denver is looking at a similar stretch of their I-70 as it comes into town from the east, which is currently an elevated viaduct, very similar to the north side of Indianapolis, and bringing that down to a boulevard. And that would, again, allow the neighborhoods that were once severed by this this viaduct to be reconnected. You know, as Marsh mentioned, San Francisco is a great example. You know, many years ago after their earthquake, they tore down they tore down the Embarcadero Freeway. And the amount of new vitality and new development and new sort of placemaking that has happened where that was is probably one of the greatest success stories when it comes to removal of interstate, so much so that they're looking at other sections of their interstate now, not because they need to come down, but because they understand the benefits of taking it down. So there are lessons to be learned, and, you know, the Congress for New Urbanism Freeways Without Futures website has been a great resource to us as we look at the possibilities.
Gotten an email from a listener named Richard that speaks to, I think, concerns both of you have voiced, but this, most particularly Marsh. And again, if you want to join this conversation by email, you can send your email to nolimits@wfyi.org. Richard writes, "What used to be a nice safe home in a nice African-American neighborhood now sits under I-65. That neighborhood, that highway destroyed my neighborhood." How common were these stories, Marsh?
Very common. I mean, as I said earlier, there was these neighborhoods, many of them at the time were considered dispensable. Fair game for interstate construction. These were, in many cases, neighborhoods that didn't wield a lot of political clout. The power brokers didn't live in these neighborhoods. And so, yes, I think that is a common story. We see it in many other forms of encroachment, not, of course, just highways, but institutional and other forms. But, yes, I think that's one of the biggest issues across America as we look at where the highways were located. There is a great degree of social justice issue here in looking at both the history and the potential future of where we put our highways and what we do with them. We think that widening the highways in our downtown would only exacerbate that sense of separation, that lack of connectivity, lack of walkability. It's going to have a negative impact on property values in the areas that are nearby, and not just the historic. Your earlier caller was absolutely right. Not just the historic neighborhoods, but one of the things that you might hear in this debate is that the Department of Transportation has quite a bit of right of way to work within, and so they will not be. One of the things they have to consider is the impact on historic resources. So their historic part does come into that. But by working entirely within their right of way, it can be said that they will not physically touch, you know, historic property, and therefore will not have an adverse impact. There are many other forms of impact: noise, pollution, dirt, vibration, things that need to be taken into account for the livability of these neighborhoods, historic or otherwise.
We've got a Facebook question from a listener named Scott. And again, if you want to join the conversation by Facebook, you can find us at No Limits. WFYI. Scott writes, exactly, could they contrast their opinion of what NDOT has proposed versus what they think the best option is in specifics? Not just better for Indy, but is that same grade lanes, trains, buses, and speaking of incentivizing, are we paying people to drive around or making downtown toll roads? Kevin, I think... That one's pitched more directly at you.
There's a lot of issues in that question. Yeah. Well, I think that the first part of that question, contrasting what we feel NDOT is currently proposing to, you know, kind of the concepts we've developed, I think they're, in a way, they're kind of night and day. You know, it's what we are proposing, we feel can certainly handle the traffic impacts and the traffic capacity that NDOT is trying to meet. The difference is we're not really looking at this project as a single purpose project. It's simply not just moving vehicles from point A to point B. What we're looking at this project is it's an opportunity. It's a kind of a once in a lifetime, once in a generation opportunity to remake the front door, if you will, of downtown Indianapolis. So specifically, again, we are not proposing at this point an elevated highway. We would propose to bring that down to grade and have a grid-connected system, as we've mentioned before, which might also involve, if necessary, depressed or encapped lanes, a tunnel, mm-hmm. if you will, for through traffic. So roughly 75% of the traffic that's on this interstate system is destined for downtown Indianapolis, 65 to 75. So these are commuters coming in and out mm-hmm. of downtown. The balance, you know, the 25 to 35 is just folks that are driving from Chicago to Louisville or, you know, mm-hmm. Carmel to Greenwood. You know, they're just passing through downtown. So there's no need necessarily to bring that portion of the traffic down to the city grid. You know, we can certainly incentivize that traffic to head around 465. As I mentioned, that's about the same travel distance as it is to go through town. Or we can accommodate them in express lanes, if you will, through lanes that would be below this new boulevard system.
Gotten an email from a listener named Mark. And again, if you want to join the conversation by email, please send it to us at nolimits@wfyi.org. Mark writes, does your plan for the expansion of these highways include the introduction of self-driving cars and trucks? If so, can you talk as to how this will change our highways? Kevin, either one of you? Well, I know, Kevin, hasn't that been one of your concerns?
I'll take a stab at it. Yeah, and I think that the broader point sort of implied by the question is transportation as we know it today is changing dramatically. We know that self-driving or autonomous vehicles are on their way, whether they be trucks or passenger cars. We also know that with population growth comes a need to think about transit And so it just seems a little, myopic to us to simply think about this as transportation as we know it today. We need to plan for the future, and we think the future includes all of those different modes of travel. And the plan needs to accommodate and think about that as well.
Marsh,
yeah. I'd like to, if I could, go back to the previous question that mm-hmm. made a good point, if I can extract just part of it, about he's correct in the sense that we sometimes do talk in generalities. Mm-hmm. What we need here in this process moving forward is the same kind of investment in engineering for these alternatives that we're seeing for the conventional highway construction. A lot of money is being invested in looking into the expansion. What we would like to see come out of this is a similar amount of let's just call it money, a similar amount of investment in the engineering that it would take to seriously look at these other alternatives. What are we really talking about if we are going to put the traffic onto the grid or improve the grid or build parkways and intermodal systems? We don't have the engineering for that yet. We have the ideas, the general concepts. We see what other cities are doing, and other cities are investing in that, basically that level of research. We need that here in Indianapolis before we can have a really informed dialogue about what the alternatives are on an apples-to-apples basis.
And, yeah,
go ahead, Kevin.
Sorry, John. Please. I was just going to follow up on that. I think that the thing that we need to realize is some of these other solutions that need to be studied. You know, we're simply advocating for solutions now, but we certainly agree with Marsh that a more robust analysis of alternatives needs to be done. What we need to realize is, as a part of that analysis, there needs to be evaluation criteria for all alternatives that considers not just traffic capacity and traffic movement, but economic development, job creation, connectivity to transit, walkability, and connection of neighborhoods. These are criteria that all of these options need to be evaluated against. When I talk about economic development, there are opportunities with creative financing strategies to leverage new development to help pay for and bring new funding to the table to pay for a more progressive approach to the design of this. So I think what we're saying is we have an opportunity here in front of us, and in 50 years from now, we will all look back on this, and we will look back on this as either this has been a master stroke of foresight that fed new energy, vitality, and economic development and jobs into our growing downtown, or we'll look back on it as a case study that for missed opportunities and an example of short-sightedness that was only focused on traffic.
That'll have to be the last word. There is an event on February 26th at Indiana Landmarks. Go to the Indiana Landmarks website, though, to reserve space. I'd like to thank my guests, Andy Dietrich, Seth Schickel, Marsh Davis, and Kevin Osborne, for what has been a lively and provocative conversation. Not the last time we're going to be talking about this issue. I am John Kroll. You've been listening to No Limits. Thank you for joining us.
No Limits is a production of 90.1 WFYI Public Radio, Indianapolis. Producers, Sarah Neal Estes, Roxana Caldwell, and Jill Sheridan. Interactive Media Coordinator, Scott McAllister. Technical Producers, Cedric Freeman and Chris Flood. And Board Engineer, Joe Hatcher. Emily Matheny screens our calls. No Limits is made available through IPBS, Indiana's public broadcasting stations.